And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. That'd be this one, Alabama. And I mean, this show sends its signal like way on down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, even Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. All right, hey, listen, I'm going to jump into the first of the three dippers for the day. I'm calling this one Defend Defense. And y'all know my background. Most of y'all been listening to the show for a while. It's generational army in my family, right? I have a huge soft spot in my heart for the military. It was always a good experience for me. I'm not going to say it wasn't always easy. I'm just saying it was always a good experience. I came away from my 30 years of service pleased to have been there, proud to have been a part of things. Some of the best relationships I ever made were those I made in uniform. My grandfather, my father, myself, and other members of my family still on active duty now. And I'll just tell you, it's amazing to me to watch some of what's happening. And I feel certain that I'm not, like, generationally the first to feel this way, because I remember my dad talking about the hollow army of the 70s during the Carter era. Post-Vietnam, downsized the military, did away with the draft, so we saw an immediate downsize in the force. And then at the same time, armed conflict was behind us because we were out of Vietnam. And then Carter took over, and he was probably second only to Biden in terms of being the most ineffective president we've ever had. Interesting thing is, Carter was a veteran. He'd been a Navy submarine officer. But even as a submariner, it just seemed like he didn't have a clue. Now, I chalked Carter up in looking back. I was a kid, but I look back on that era, and I chalk it up to an inability to be effective. And truthfully, he was in the wake of some hard times. I mean, he came soon after the heels of Watergate. Ford had taken over for Nixon. Ford didn't run again. Carter wound up prevailing. And then next thing you know, Carter's a one-term president, though. And we had the Iran hostage situation in the final days of his presidency, which resolved itself quickly once Reagan got elected. I'd like to say it took Carter to bring us a Reagan, and there's that. Keep that in mind. Keep that in mind right now. As you and I, all conservatives, are we looking towards 2024, and we're wondering how in the world we're going to make it to November of 2024. It took a Carter to bring us a Reagan. It took a Carter to break the notion that we needed a Democrat in the presidency. He disabused that for quite a while, and we entered the era of Reagan and then Bush. And then, of course, we had Clinton. But then we had Bush II. And then, of course, we had Obama. It's always cyclic. It goes around. But what I feel like I'm seeing right now in today's military, despite the fact that my dad had the hollow army to serve through, he retired in the early 80s. But he served through a dry time, y'all. Well, my granddad did too. I mean, coming in the wake of World War II, there was a mass demobilization. And then we hit Korea. And then, you know, but I'm just saying, there was a period of uncertainty as we, and I'm going to tell you about it in more detail in just a minute. But I do want to say this. As much as I'm concerned about the leadership, mostly civilian, but also some of the senior military leadership, as much as I'm concerned about the policies, the procedures, the readiness, I still believe that we have some of the finest among us, some of the finest young men and women of our nation, the finest that we can produce are still in uniform. And I believe that with all my heart. Here's an example. Before I go into some of the things that aggravate me, I want to encourage y'all with this. Found this story this morning, Army Times. Story came out 3 days ago. Says this soldier used his body as a shield to stop a violent assault. Says a junior enlisted soldier at Schofield Barracks in Hawaii will receive the Soldier's Medal on Wednesday afternoon for intervening in a violent assault. By the way, the Soldier's Medal, if you're not familiar, is the highest award for non-combat heroism. There was a time when it was finally recognized that, you know what, sometimes we have troops that really do something that's, you know, it qualifies it. In fact, the standard is a clearly recognizable personal hazard or a danger and the voluntary risk of their own life to get something done. And it happens during non-war. Well, that's what happened here. Specialist Rene Rodriguez, assigned to, let's see what all is he with here. 2nd Battalion, 35th Infantry, 3rd Infantry Brigade Combat Team, 25th Infantry Division. Anyway, he's with Tropic Lightning out there in Schofield Barracks, Hawaii. Says that on October 22nd of last year, he saw a man violently assaulting a woman off post, and he immediately inserted himself in the process. Says Rodriguez, with complete disregard for his own safety, swiftly moved to protect a woman during a violent assault. He used his body as a shield. He endured numerous strikes from the assailant while he tried to move the woman away, got her to his vehicle. He continued to protect the woman until law enforcement arrived on the scene. It turns out that the man who was beating the woman on the street was a felon who was wanted for murder. And all said and done, he saved the woman's life, it's really believed. And he took a lot of blows doing it. But he did what he had to do to defend the defenseless. And he's going to get the Soldier's Medal for it. I say all that because I wanted to go first into the fact that I really believe, y'all, that the finest among us are these still these young kids that sign up voluntarily and join the military. Now, let's talk about where we are, though. And here's a lessons learned thing. I'm a huge fan of look at your history and learn from it, or you're doomed to repeat it. That axiom, man, I'm just telling you. We have got to stay in tune with what's done before. And what we're seeing in the past, if it's happening in the present, it better be for the right reasons and not because we just ignored things and then repeated processes we shouldn't have repeated. But a retired three-star by the name of Lieutenant General Greg Newbold, he wrote a piece that came out on military.com. And what's interesting is military.com is frustrating. Military.com is a news source dedicated to all news military, but they are often so liberal. They're like the AL.com of Alabama. But this article came out, and it caught my attention, and it's called Inconvenient Truths for the Next War. Now listen, this is exactly what I've been saying about paying attention to history. This retired three-star says this: those who create and govern our national security, they should be required to take a test. And the test is simple. But note that the passing grade is only 100%. Here's the questions. Describe the significance of the following events in recent American history. And he lists four. Kasserine passed, the Doolittle Board, Task Force Smith, and Project 100,000. Now, I was on board with three of those. Project 100,000, I was not. But here's the thing. Is our leadership paying attention to the lessons learned from Kasserine Pass, the Doolittle Board, Task Force Smith, Project 100,000? What are they? Some of y'all already know. Some of y'all are in your mind jumping to it going, oh, yeah. Here's the thing. Start in order. Kasserine Pass. World War II kicked off for us with the attack on Pearl Harbor. Then we joined the war against the Nazi Germany as well. And the very first force-on-force that we had against the Germans occurred 15 months after Pearl Harbor, and it was a total disaster. It was at the Battle of Kasserine Pass in North Africa. Numerically inferior German forces. We had them far outnumbered. American forces were not only routed, but we retreated nearly 50 miles. We lost 3,300 men. Another 3,000 were captured. We lost 183 tanks on the battlefield that day, only 20 lost by the Germans. It was a complete and reckless rout. And it immediately called for reforms and the ability to change our warfighting skills. In other words, we were caught off guard, unprepared, and untrained. Readiness was not where it needed to be. Kasserine Pass. Come after World War II, there was a massive push for demobilization. Congress and the media wanted to rapidly demobilize. So Lieutenant Colonel Jimmy Doolittle chaired a board, which became known as the Doolittle Board, and they put all kinds of reforms in place. And they went way too far. Says overdue reforms to officer and enlisted legal systems swung the pendulum too far. Discipline, a fundamental and critical requirement, faltered as both officers and non-commissioned officers became timid in enforcing standards. In other words, what happened was a softening of the standards and a weakening of the discipline. Does that sound familiar? Then we move on right after that to what's known as Task Force Smith. If you're not familiar with Task Force Smith, it's a lesson in how not to do it. Task Force Smith was the very first U.S. unit that met with North Koreans on the battlefield in Korea. It says the first U.S. Army unit on the scene. The first U.S. Army unit on the scene, Task Force Smith, confronted a North Korean Army unit near Osan. After fighting for 3 hours, it was routed, abandoning both its equipment and its wounded, who were later executed by the North Koreans. Leadership, equipment, and training failures were cited as contributing factors, but the pernicious effects of the Doolittle Board mentality had been studied as the reasons why. In other words, Doolittle Board had weakened the military, softened the standards, lowered the training requirements, and then Task Force Smith got routed soon thereafter. So we went from Kasserine Pass to ramping up through World War II to softening the standards again after the war to getting routed again, having to ramp back up, and then came Project 100,000. This one will kill you. In 1966, it says, the Department of Defense instituted a social program. A social program. You hear where we're going here? A social program that was broadcast as part of President Lyndon Johnson's War on Poverty called Project 100,000. Coming in using the military as the object to get social policy accomplished. That's what happened. Does that sound familiar? It says, with great certainty but nearly incomprehensible blindness to consequences, the DOD targeted for recruitment what it referred to as new standards men. New standards men. What is that? Well, it enlisted 320,000 people who would not have qualified for military service prior to it. Wow. And they would ordinarily have been medically disqualified, many of them. They were not minor waivers. A sizable number of them were considered to be mentally illiterate. As they tested so low in aptitude then, a lot of them were put in the less technical ground combat arms. Hello, I'm an infantry guy. Wow. The quantifiable results of the new standards men were that they were three times more likely to be killed in action. Project 100,000 recruits had higher disciplinary rates. Twice as many were discharged before they even completed their obligation. Post-war outcomes were worse than they were with those who did not serve. Higher disciplinary rates, additional supervision, higher drug use. All said and done, what he's saying is this. When you politicize in such a way that you soften the standards and you push people into letting social policy be what drives the train for military readiness, you're going to lose every time. And senior leadership needs to go back and study Kasserine Pass, the Doolittle Board, Task Force Smith, and Project 100,000. And you'll quickly see that everything you're seeing out of the Biden administration right now is daggum, a repeat of where we've been, and it ain't good. All right, we're going to take a break right now. We'll take this break. I'll come right back, and dang, I got more. I got some stuff that's going to curl your hair. We're talking about defending defense. Those of y'all out there that are green suitors, retired from the service, or have veterans in your family, we appreciate you. Stay tuned. It's going to get better. 2024 is coming. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, saving the world one soundbite at a time. I got a caller on the line. Is that Sparky's on line one? Hey, Spark, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, happy Friday to you and Boomer. Great show.
Thank you, buddy. You too.
The topic of the purposeful degrading and diminishment of the military, obviously, is close to your heart, very close to my heart.
Yeah.
I was in the active service from 1978 through 2003 and then pretty much worked for the Army on and off ever since and seen a lot of commanders in chief. And I put quotation marks around a few of those.
Yeah.
It seems like something you said about Lyndon Baines Johnson's little experiment with the 100,000 and extremely low standards, you couldn't ask for more purposeful destruction of the military, in my opinion. But I'm drawing a corollary to some of the worst periods of degrading of our U.S. military to presidents who had extremely low moral character. And Lyndon Baines Johnson was definitely one of those.
Yeah.
Obviously, Joe Biden, a criminal, a crook, if ever there was one. Bill Clinton, who I served under, who was obviously more of a philanderer as far as low character, but he did no favors to the military while I was in it, that's for sure. Ironically, one of my favorite commanders-in-chief of all time was a Democrat, Harry S. Truman. The guy had high integrity, and he did things right. If you've never studied up on the man, he's worth reading about.
Yeah, it's amazing too. I mean, you like to think that an institution like the military can exist without having to be overly influenced by the changing executive every 4 to 8 years. But at the same time, though, that executive branch, that's the commander in chief. It has an amazing amount of influence, and it can make institutional change if we're not careful.
What I'm becoming aware of, the social experimentation that began under Barack Obama, whose very charisma and easily hoodwinking people with his artificial insincere charm, he was kind of baby steps in the destruction of the military. It seems like the criminal Joe Biden is absolutely wide open, throttles full open, floodgates full open, trying to destroy the military, if only to weaken us in the stature of the entire world to make all the people he's taking money from in other nations stronger. But I'm really hoping these hearings this week have some positive outcome toward putting that entire crime family in prison. As far as I'm concerned, that's where they all belong.
That's going to be later in the show, too. I got a whole dipper today. I'm calling it Biden unraveling, and I'm hoping the fact that we're seeing it actually being reported means that the veil of protection is being lifted off of him. I think even the Democrats are getting tired of him. But, Spark, I appreciate you, man. Thanks again for your service, as always. We appreciate you, buddy.
And yours too, and I'll be listening eagerly to the rest of the show. Thank you.
All right, man. Take care. Hey, so I'm moving forward in this, and Sparky nailed it. You know, when the various commanders in chief, and I like the way he said some of those have quotation marks around it. When they come in, they bring their own notions, they bring their own influences, and you would like to think they would have a respect for the longevity and the historicity and the readiness and the discipline. And the need for a strong military, but they don't always. What we saw earlier with Johnson having his Project 100,000, we're going to do a social experiment. Oh, look, I've got a whole military I can use to help me do that. That's exactly what we're seeing with Biden right now. Story here on townhall.com came out yesterday. When Republicans took back the House last November, said Congressman Jim Banks, we pledged to end the Biden administration's partisan weaponization of our federal government. He himself is a member of House Armed Services and a member of the Select Committee on Chinese Communist Party, and he's also a Navy veteran. So he believes that the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, that was just passed by the House, is probably one of the more conservative he's seen. And he said it gives troops a 5.2% pay raise. It requires an audit of the $76 billion that taxpayers have sent to Ukraine. It provides more money for ships and drones, but what it also does is it removes divisive and partisan DOD programs. It removes the idea of sex reassignment surgeries in the military. It removes the idea that transgender troops can get that treatment they want to and not have to deploy, which I'll tell you about that in a minute. And he goes on to say, we need to get this passed, even down to the point of doing away with DEI positions in the Pentagon. That all needs to happen, because every bit of what I just said is social engineering. That's a broad-based thing, but just understand this. The House has passed an NDAA. The Senate has to take it up. One of the articles in my stack is Schumer, who still has the right to set the agenda in the Senate, saying they're going to be fixing that. They plan to strip out those amendments. Wow. Well, we'll see how that goes. But in the meantime, when I get back, I'm going to go through some examples of things that we have got to do away with if we want to see our military preserved. If we're going to defend defense, what do we got to do? Well, how about this? Start with the transgender issue in the military. I'll tell you why in a minute. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios for hour number two. Local, state, national, man, I'm telling you, we cover down on all the issues. And like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. All right, we're still in number one of the Triple Dipper, defending defense. And I got a caller that held on during the break, so let me honor his time and jump in there real quick. John from Madison. Hey, John, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good, sir. I'm good. What's on your mind?
You were talking about that list of four items there, which
yeah,
I think I knew something about. I knew something about all of them, but the reason I called was I was a platoon leader.
Okay.
And my platoon was made up largely of McNamara's 100,000. I guess they call it Project 100,000 here, but when I was in the battalion, they said the warrant that the personnel guy had me read all the, so I knew what the heck I was dealing with. Made sure that I knew that most of my soldiers were from a program called McNamara's 100,000.
Wow. How'd that go? By the way, thank you for your service.
You probably thank some of them, too. But actually, to tell you the truth, there was a couple of things that I've seen over the years that I don't think are accurate about them. But, I know you're from a world around down here. You're not dealing with Cat 1 guys that are going to deal with rocket science. So, you had to be careful what you had to understand what you were dealing with when you were dealing with these guys. But for the most part, I'll have to separate it in two pieces. For the most part, they weren't bad kids.
Yeah.
The problem was that Nixon was president by the time this happened. I was in the service. But the draft was, there were lots of what you'd just call criminals. So in that same platoon, when I was going through this, five of those soldiers in that platoon had hardcore felony convictions that they'd just been put in the Army.
Wow.
And one of the troops eventually in that outfit was going to commit first-degree murder. So it was kind of a rough time with when I look back on it, I guess I was dumb, and you know how you are when you're a second lieutenant, and everything was new. And I had a couple of different platoons in the same battalion, and they were silly enough to make me a company commander as a first lieutenant. So I was 23 when I got picked to do that. So,
wow.
So it definitely wasn't for the faint of heart. You just sort of had to understand what you were dealing with. And the one thing that I've heard that I don't believe is accurate, and this is when I became a company commander, my senior raider was an infantry colonel. And tough old guy, you know, Silver Star from Korea, was on that jump, the airborne jump in Korea.
Yeah.
And he had lots of time in Vietnam. And he was talking to me one day, and he wanted to make sure I understand. He had been a personnel guy in D.C. So he wanted to make sure I understood what I had been dealing with and what I was dealing with. But what he said always stuck with me for years and years after that. He said that the really sharp kids that didn't have a background in anything else. If you were 18 and you were a drafted and you were a high school, you know, had a high school diploma, they were going to put you in the infantry. You're going to be 11B because there's a filter that goes on. You've probably seen it. I hear your background. There's a filter that goes on. You can't have a screw up the closer you get to the trouble. So they put those kind of kids into, if you're just a straight, and I had a good friend who, same thing, 18, high school grad, and he got drafted, and he was dead within about 4 months in Vietnam. So,
oh, wow.
But he said what they did, if you were just like a Cat 1 or just your normal high school grad, and we're draftee, you were going to an infantry unit probably. And they would take the people like the McNamara 100,000, or as you worked your way, you remember there was a thing called Cat 4s even before them. And so they had these big mobilizations in World War II, and they sort of still had the same rules floating around during the draft. So they would put those guys into, you know, units that, you know, they would be ammo humpers, say, in an artillery unit, or they'd be in a construction engineer outfit or something like that, you know.
Hey, John, I got to move it along here, buddy.
Yeah, okay. But they didn't just put the stuff about they were in infantry units. They may have been, but I don't think that was the way they planned to do it.
Well, I mean, I look at it, too, and I can't help but think, though, that some of the things you probably had to deal with disciplinary-wise, you might not have had to deal with had they not had a social experimentation going on.
Oh, I was a battalion commander later, and I think I mentioned to your screener, I had the platoon leaders go through the lineage of the battalion and the streamers, and one of the streamers was for Kazarine Pass. They had they had 107 casualties in one night at Kazarine. So, but in that battalion, I had one UCMJ in 2 years.
Wow.
As a battalion commander in the 80s. I had 10 court-martials going at one time as a company commander.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, it was a zoo. I mean,
well,
but anyway, yeah, you've heard enough of my old story here.
Well, no, that's good stuff, though. But first of all, again, thank you for your service. Yeah, it's interesting for me to read this stuff and to hearken back to memories, but to have you have walked in it, that adds a new flavor to it. So, hey, John, thank you very much for the call. Call again anytime, all right?
All right. Hey, thank you.
All right, thank you, bye-bye, sir. Wow, that's 10 UCMJs going as a company commander. Holy cow. For those who don't know, that's a lot. That means you've got 10 potential UCMJ actions, not always court-martial, but the reality is you've got 10 UCMJ actions going at one time. Well, that's like saying you've got a percentage of your unit at that point. I mean, I would bet as a company commander, I don't know what kind of, you know, true company he had and what the Manning roster had on it, but I'm not gonna be a bit surprised to find out he didn't have like 10% of the company at that point facing UCMJ action. This is what happens when you have social engineering as a part of the driving force for building your military. Let me, speaking of which, let's talk about some of the latest versions of social engineering. Here's a story from Breitbart. Came out 2 days ago. This is maddening to me. So there's a memo that was first obtained by another source called The Dossier that just came out, that the Biden administration has put out, that says that service members who are in the service who will desire to have cross-sex hormone therapies and even surgeries will be remaining in a non-deployable status during that time. What? The only job of the military, if you break it down, the only job of the military is to be ready and trained at all times to adequately and affirmatively defend the issues of the United States, which includes deployments. When's the last time you saw a war on U.S. soil? So what I'm saying is you're going to wind up seeing now that there's an entire class of soldiers being built by the Biden administration who don't have to fight. What? So they can join the military. They can immediately say, I identify as transgender and I want to begin my hormone therapies. The memo says that they would then be having 12 months of hormone therapies, during which time they would be non-deployable. And then on top of that, they can then request, after 12 months of hormone therapies, to go ahead and go through surgical procedures, which would require quite a bit more treatments and non-deployable status. All of which is, by the way, something that is, liberals want to say it's necessary. It's not necessary. Every bit of it's elective. And so the Biden administration, using social experimentation, has decided to say that up to 9 to 18 months of a soldier's, I mean, they sign up for three-year commitments. You just made the first year and a half or more of that non-deployable. If they go through basic training, get assigned to their unit, and then immediately declare for, you know, transition therapies, you've effectively trained a soldier who will never be a soldier, because then they can get out and got everything they wanted paid for by the taxpayer. And oh, by the way, if we go to war in the interim, they stay back in the rear with the gear and do nothing. Do nothing. Except lament the day that they ever joined the Army, never mind the fact that the Army paid for it all. By the way, that memo came from WAMAC Army Medical Center at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Well, Fort Liberty now. home of the 82nd Airborne and the Special Forces Command. I'm just saying, this is a jacked up situation. But it's not just that non-deployable status, y'all. Then you've got things like this. What does it do to morale and discipline? Here's a story from the New York Post, dated 2 days ago. Military recruit considers resignation after being forced to shower with trans women who had full male genitalia. This young female reported that she was afraid to say something to her superiors because she was afraid that she would have her career cut off. At the same time, she's being forced to sleep on a bunk between two biological males. In other words, they're bunk to her left, bunk to her right, biological males sleeping next to her with, you know, all their parts. At the same time, she has to use the group shower with them with all their parts. And she felt extremely uncomfortable, rightfully so. One senator found out about it, and he's livid. I think a lot of them probably are, but Senator Mike Rounds is the one from South Dakota who brought it to everybody's attention. He says, the respect this young recruit should have received and the privacy she should have had is she's being deprived of. And their options are not good. She could have basically resigned. She could have stepped away. She could have tried to start her training over again. But nonetheless, she's trying to gut it out. Meanwhile, she's being forced to stay in a position that she should never have to be in. So it's not just the non-deployable status of the individuals who are filling up a spot on the... By the way, here's the other thing. When you've got e-something identifying and going through 18 months or more of transition therapies, non-deployable status, they also still fill a spot on the Manning roster, and you can't recruit against it. It's filled. So as the recruiters are trying to find MOSs to patch people into, they've got somebody filling a role that has no intention of deploying because they've elected now to go transgender. And, oh, by the way, that means that we can't recruit against that position to find somebody to bring them in. Now, you can have excess positions occasionally, but not always. What's going to happen with all this? Well, it's becoming an issue for the presidential campaigns. It's becoming an issue for the fight for the ability to gain control of the House and Senate. I'm telling you, 2024 can't get here fast enough. We got to defend defense. I'll finish this out in just a minute. Let's go ahead and go take a break. We'll come back from that. I'll put a cap on this one. You might want to hear, what did Ron DeSantis say he would do if he got elected? I'll tell you about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, covering down some major ground as we literally save the world one soundbite at a time. Hey, gonna wrap this section up, and I've got a bunch of texts here. I'll read a couple of them real quick. Brian from Huntsville texted in. He says, what happens if a trans soldier gets taken prisoner in the Middle East? Yeah, let's don't even go there, but your point is well taken, sir. AD from Athens says, regarding military standards, Secretary of the Navy Zumwalt back in the 70s instituted three strikes and you're out drug policy, greatly weakened the Navy. The Reagan administration installed Operation Bottom Blow to get rid of the scum. I don't know what that means, but okay. Listen, AD, thanks for your service, but you got to have standards. You got to have a cutoff point. You got to have you're done. Otherwise, they're just going to keep on getting worse. Kelly from Hartzell just texted in, said, thankful for a Christian conservative radio talk show. Well, thank you, ma'am. Jesus is Lord and America's great. How about that? Kelly from Hartzell, appreciate you being in the text string. You're brand new on us there. Frank from Huntsville said, I heard this morning the military is not going to meet its recruiting goals. You're correct, sir. They're looking at the Army alone being about 15,000 below quota. Allison from Madison, thank you for your service, sir. Thank you, ma'am. And the messages and education you share with all of us ruffians. I appreciate that, Allison. Thank you very much. We put a lot of time and effort into trying to build this show every day. Let's see. I guess let me jump over here to my last few topics. Ron DeSantis, he may be the only one running for president right now who is a military veteran. I could be wrong on that. I don't mind being corrected if I got that. I mean, there's quite a slate of people on the Republican side. So I don't think, though, I think he may be the only veteran, Navy veteran, JAG officer, spent time overseas during Operation Iraqi Freedom. In an interview on CNN, story here on National Review, by the way, July 18th, a few days ago. In an interview on CNN, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis defended his latest policy proposal, saying that he will transform a woke, climate-obsessed military under President Joe Biden into one that can actually deter China from invading Taiwan. He says, "You've got a problem with morale." And the Florida governor went on to say, "People want to join the military because they think it's something different, something important. I think some of the civilian leaders in the military are trying to have the military just mimic corporate America and academia." One area he said he would address is the military and national security establishment's focus on climate change. That's the other thing. We're talking about transgenders and all that a minute ago. But keep in mind, too, the Biden administration has said that climate change is the existential threat to the United States. I mean, climate change. And so we're about to have a whole bunch of our military fleet force transitioned to electric vehicles. Unbelievable. He says, "How are you going to equip a fighting force to win?" This is Ron DeSantis. "Are you going to put those climate considerations in, or are you going to create the most lethal force available? China's not going to use those considerations. If they need to burn more coal to defend their country, they're going to burn more coal to defend their country." So basically, DeSantis has got the right attitude. The military's goal is to fight and win. If the establishment, the corporate America, can come up with the best version of doing EV and it makes good sense to readiness, then do it. But if it doesn't, for the love, keep us in a ready posture. That's what we got to do. I've got any number of things here that I'm probably not going to get to. But I'll tell you this. The NDAA right now is before the Senate coming up next. Story here on Politico. Phil, you went to Politico? Yes, I did. Politico, Schumer referred to the anti-woke amendments put in place by the House Republicans as toxic amendments. Says he prepares right now to fight the far-right proposals in the Pentagon bill. Majority Leader Chuck Schumer made the plea as the Senate gears up to consider its version of the National Defense Authorization Act this week, which he and other leaders aim to pass before Congress leaves for the August recess. The push from Schumer comes after Speaker Kevin McCarthy and House Republicans narrowly passed a defense bill last week. Narrowly passed. It's a narrow majority. They passed it with all the Republicans. That rolls back things like abortion access, surgeries, and hormone treatments for transgender troops, diversity programs. Nearly all Democrats opposed the legislation. Nearly all? That means some didn't. Schumer swiped at the House Republicans on Tuesday, calling the upper chamber's $886 billion bill a prime example of bipartisanship. Whatever. Listen, the bottom line is this, y'all. Wokeness and social experimentation has no place in our military readiness. And we have got to get somebody in there next year who will make the military strong. We got to defend defense. All right, coming up next, we're going to switch gears, going to take a mini dipper and talk to our friend Todd Stacey from Alabama Daily News about a new interview with Governor Ivey. We'll be right back.